Welcome to Washington Today for Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. President Joe Biden brought together the world's nations to address the issues of the COVID-19 pandemic, climate change, and human rights abuses in his first address before the UN General Assembly today. We'll have more on his address and an interview with Wall Street Journal reporter Ken Thomas coming up. Photos and a video of a Border Patrol agent on horseback using his long leather reins to lash at Haitian migrants along the U.S.-Mexico border prompted Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to say he was, quote, horrified by the images. The images that have spread widely on social media and drawn outrage from members of Congress, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, show some of the mounted agents using their horses to forcibly move and block the migrants, seeming to herd them like animals and taunt them in at least one instance. We'll hear response to these images from Vice President Kamala Harris and Secretary Mayorkas later in the program. And at a Senate Homeland Security hearing looking at the threats to the homeland, FBI Director Christopher Wray said that Afghanistan unrest could inspire extremism inside the U.S. The collapse of Afghanistan's government and the potential rise of foreign terror groups there could inspire Westerners to commit acts of violence. That's on top of a domestic terrorism caseload that Director Wray said has, quote, exploded since the spring of 2020 from about 1,000 investigations to around 2,700. That's all ahead on Washington Today. We begin in New York, where President Biden gave his first address to the United Nations General Assembly as Commander-in-Chief. President Biden outlined a U.S. foreign policy vision rooted in global alliances. Here's a portion of his remarks.
We meet this year in a moment of intermingled with great pain and extraordinary possibility. We've lost so much to this devastating pandemic that continues to claim lives around the world and impact so much on our existence. We're mourning more than 4.5 million people, people of every nation, from every background. Each death is an individual heartbreak. But our shared grief is a poignant reminder that our collective future will hinge on our ability to recognize our common humanity and to act together. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the clear and urgent choice that we face here at the dawning of what must be a decisive decade for our world, a decade that will quite literally determine our futures. As a global community, we're challenged by urgent and looming crises, wherein lie enormous opportunities if we can summon the will and resolve to seize these opportunities. Will we work together to save lives, defeat COVID-19 everywhere, and take the necessary steps to prepare ourselves for the next pandemic, for there will be another one? Or will we fail to harness the tools at our disposal as the more virulent and dangerous variants take hold? Will we meet the threat of the challenging climate we're all feeling, already ravaging every part of our world with extreme weather? Or will we suffer the merciless march of ever-worsening droughts and floods, more intense fires and hurricanes, longer heat waves and rising seas? Will we affirm and uphold the human dignity and human rights under which nations in common cause more than seven decades ago formed this institution? Will we apply and strengthen the core tenets of the international system, including the UN Charter and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as we seek to shape the emergence of new technologies and deter new threats? Or will we allow those universal principles to be trampled and twisted in the pursuit of naked political power? In my view, how we answer these questions in this moment, whether we choose to fight for our shared future or not, will reverberate for generations yet to come. Simply put, we stand, in my view, at an inflection point in history. And I'm here today to share with you how the United States intends to work with partners and allies to answer these questions. And the commitment of my new administration to help lead the world toward a more peaceful, prosperous future for all people.
President Biden also emphasized the importance of diplomacy at a time when relations with some U.S. allies are strained.
All the major powers of the world have a duty, in my view, to carefully manage their relationships so they do not tip from responsible competition to conflict. The United States will compete and will compete vigorously and lead with our values and our strength. We'll stand up for our allies and our friends and oppose attempts by stronger countries to dominate weaker ones, whether through changes to territory by force, economic coercion, technical exploitation, or disinformation. But we're not seeking, say it again, we are not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks.
And on the heels of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, President Biden made this comment.
Make no mistake, the United States will continue to defend ourselves, our allies, and our interests against attack, including terrorist threats, as we prepare to use force if any is necessary. But to defend our vital U.S. national interest, including against ongoing and imminent threats, but the mission must be clear and achievable, undertaken with informed consent of the American people, and whenever possible, in partnership with our allies. U.S. military power must be our tool of last resort, not our first, and it should not be used as an answer to every problem we see around the world.
Biden urges global cooperation on COVID-19, climate change. The article at WSJ.com. On the phone is White House reporter for The Wall Street Journal, Ken Thomas. What was President Biden's overall message today?
Biden's first speech to the UN General Assembly was in large part a pivot, a focus on moving from the wars of the past. We saw the U.S. withdraw from Afghanistan and move towards what he referred to as relentless diplomacy. That is music to the ears of the diplomats in the room, but there's certainly a fair amount of skepticism of whether the words will be matched by actions in the future. Biden entered that hall having dealt with a very chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, which the world watched very closely. And he's also in the middle right now of a bit of a diplomatic spat with France over a nuclear submarine deal. And so, there was certainly an openness and a willingness to hear this message. He spoke about the need to come together on issues like climate change and battling COVID-19. But there certainly was a fair amount of skepticism in the hall.
And you mentioned that the diplomats are receiving his message well. Anybody else receiving his message well?
Well, there's certainly an interest in moving forward in the global stage. I think there's concern that the UN Secretary General aired that the U.S. and China could be moving into some kind of new Cold War in an interview before the General Assembly began. Antonio Guterres said that the relationship between the U.S. and China was completely dysfunctional, and he was very worried about that. What was interesting, we did not hear Biden address China by name, but he certainly made clear that he heard that criticism and wanted to respond to it. What was interesting, Biden said in the interview that we are not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks. So that was his way of addressing some of those concerns that people around the world may have that the U.S. and China is headed towards some sort of dispute or war. The Biden administration has said that they don't view the relationship with China in a confrontational way. It's more of a competition, and they feel that there are ways that they can work together. The other most important thing really is that this was the first meeting. Sorry. Another important thing is that this was really the last meeting where we'll have all of these countries together before the climate change talks in Glasgow, Scotland. That's later this fall. There's going to be a real effort to try to get consensus around the globe on ways of increasing the focus on climate change, putting forward higher standards and tougher goals to try to curb the effects of climate change. There's concerns that Guterres and others shared that there's a real risk of failure in Glasgow. And so part of Biden's speech was to focus the attention on climate change and the need for all of these countries to come together.
We're hearing from White House reporter for The Wall Street Journal, Ken Thomas. How are Republicans reacting to President Biden's United Nations General Assembly message?
Republicans say that it's just hard to take President Biden seriously after what we witnessed in Afghanistan. They feel that his speech today really fell short after the withdrawal from Afghanistan. They would argue that has really emboldened American adversaries and people who want to bring harm to the country. And they also feel like this withdrawal really undercut the approach that many allies around the world had taken. They also feel that Biden has not taken a tough enough line with China. And so, the argument you're hearing from Republicans today is that, Biden can, talk tough, but really it doesn't do much if the follow through and the actions are weak. And so you're really hearing that from a number of congressional Republicans and some of the leadership, around the country among the Republican Party.
President Biden also met with Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison. What impact, if any, does President Biden's message today have on his current relationship with Prime Minister Morrison?
So that was one of the bilateral meetings that the president had along the sidelines of the UN. Prime Minister Morrison, leads a country that's a very close ally of the United States. But they have certainly been embroiled in this dispute with France over the agreement that the U.S. reached with Australia and the United Kingdom to pursue a nuclear submarine pact. And, that it left France out of the deal, and it's become a huge issue internally in that country. There are a number of jobs at stake. President Macron is seeking re-election, and that is certainly raising concerns. The French have, as a result of this deal, recalled their ambassadors to Washington and Australia, and the French foreign minister even called the agreement a stab in the back. That's hardly diplomatic language. So this meeting with Australia had been pre-planned. President Biden is expected to speak to President Macron soon in the coming days. The White House said that to look for that call soon. And, right now they're trying to repair the damage that has taken place and affirm the longstanding alliance between the U.S. and France. But it certainly colored the views, I think, of many as President Biden took the podium today.
Are there any other one-on-one meetings of note?
Well, this is a very heavily focused week of foreign policy for President Biden. In addition to Morrison, he's also going to be meeting with the leaders of India and Japan. And the three countries are called the Quad. There'll be a meeting later in the week. It focuses on the Pacific Rim and issues in the Indian Ocean. We're also going to see the president meet in Washington with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. That will be later today. It's obviously one of the most important diplomatic relationships that any president can have, and they will be discussing a number of issues, including the work that that countries need to take together to collectively fight the pandemic.
Biden urges global cooperation on COVID-19, climate change. The article at WSJ.com. Here with us, White House reporter for The Wall Street Journal, Ken Thomas. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And more reaction from Republicans after President Biden's speech to the United Nations General Assembly. We hear from Tennessee Republican Representative Chuck Fleischman.
Well, the president has had a failed record. This Biden administration has had a failed record from the inception since they've been sworn in. Biden, from time to time, can give a good speech, but the United States now is in a very disadvantageous position vis-a-vis where we were in the previous administration. Let's face it, America was leading the world. Our allies knew they were our friends. Our foes knew they had to be accountable. We've seen failures in Afghanistan. We've seen failures at the border. So Biden, in a way, almost synonymous with his speech for his inauguration, hit certain highlights. But the reality is this is an administration in chaos, in disarray, and is in damage control. So my point is we need to have America lead, not the globalist lead. We need to put America first, and we need to get America strong. That will send a stronger message. Actions speak louder than words. Today we heard words from Joe Biden. The actions have been very different.
That's Tennessee Republican Representative Chuck Fleischman speaking on Newsmax. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back. This is Washington Today. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are more of today's headlines. The House pushed forward to vote on legislation to fund the government, suspend the federal debt limit, and provide disaster and refugee aid, forcing a showdown with Republicans who oppose the package despite the risk of a fiscal crisis. The federal government faces a shutdown if funding stops at the September 30th end of the fiscal year. That's midnight, next Thursday. At the same time, the U.S. risks defaulting on its accumulated debt load if its borrowing limits are not waived or adjusted. Brazil's President Jair Bolsonaro defended his administration at the UN General Assembly today. He rebuffed criticism of Brazil's handling of the pandemic and touted recent data indicating less Amazon deforestation. During his speech to the UN General Assembly, Bolsonaro flouted the requirement for all attendees to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Infected with the virus last year, Bolsonaro has said several times over the last week that he remains unvaccinated and that getting a shot is a personal medical decision. And President Joe Biden is betting on millions more rapid at-home tests to help curb the latest deadly wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is overloading hospitals and threatening to shutter classrooms around the country. But the tests have already disappeared from pharmacy shelves in many parts of the U.S., and manufacturers warn it'll take them weeks to ramp up production. That's after scaling back amid plummeting demand over the summer. In Del Rio, Texas, the Associated Press reporting that options are narrowing for thousands of Haitian migrants straddling the Mexico-Texas border. More than 6,000 Haitians and other migrants had been removed from an encampment there in Del Rio as U.S. officials continue to defend the expulsion of migrants to their impoverished Caribbean country. And it's this scene, the influx of Haitian migrants, and photos of border agents on horseback using leather reins to lash them that continue to be a top issue in Washington today. Vice President Kamala Harris, who was attending an event promoting the White House's Build Back Better legislation, responded to reporters' questions about the migrants and immigration.
Madam Vice President, do you have any reaction to the Border Patrol agents using horse reins to rein in Haitian migrants down at the southern border?
What I saw depicted about those individuals on horseback treating human beings the way they were is horrible. And I fully support what is happening right now, which is a thorough investigation into exactly what is going on there. But human beings should never be treated that way. And I'm deeply troubled about it. And I'll also be talking to the Secretary of my office today about it.
And just as your role as, you know, stemming migration from the from Central America, are you also going to be looking into, you know, looking at migration issues in Haiti as well?
Well, listen, the whole point is that we have to understand Haiti. I mean, talk about a country that has just experienced so much tragedy, that has been about natural disasters, that the head of state assassinated. And we really have to do a lot more to recognize that as a member of the Western Hemisphere, we've got to support some very basic needs that the people of Haiti have to get back up and to do what folks naturally want to do, be it them from Haiti or in the countries in Central America. People want to stay home. They don't want to leave home. But they leave when they cannot satisfy their basic needs. So, yes, this is a concern.
Thank
for
you
all
so very much.
Meanwhile, during a hearing before the Senate Homeland Security Committee, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas declined to give ballpark migrant numbers. Republicans on the committee questioned Secretary Mayorkas on the migrant situation and immigration. Here's Utah Republican Senator Mitt Romney.
Secretary Mayorkas, I think any unbiased person would say that the Biden administration's border and immigration policies have been nothing short of a monumental disaster. And were there not so many other disasters that the administration is encountering, it probably would be by itself enough for a government to be hanging on by a thread. We've had our disagreements in the past about how much of the illegal immigration problem is caused by pull versus push factors, and your view that we need to address so-called root causes, which is poverty and corruption in other countries. My view is that we can't solve the problems of the rest of the world. In fact, we can't solve all of our own problems, let alone for the rest of the world. But what we can address are the unnecessary pull factors, if you will, the unnecessary features that we have in place that draw people into coming into our country illegally. And let me just discuss with taxes. If an illegal individual wants to work here and wants to pay U.S. taxes, they're able to do that. Is that right? They're able to do that by getting an identification number. Is that right?
I believe they are, Senator.
Yeah, I think they're called an I-10. They can apply for an I-10. They are able to do so. Under the administration's human infrastructure bill, their children can also get an I-10, can also get that tax number for the same purpose or for whatever purpose they might have.
I don't know the answer to your question, Senator.
The answer is yes, they can. The president's so-called human infrastructure bill also provides $300 per month for every child who obtains such a number.
That's Utah Republican Senator Mitt Romney. Also, Senate Homeland Security Committee Chair Senator Gary Peters, Democrat of Michigan, questioned Secretary Mayorkas. Here's that exchange.
Secretary Mayorkas, I think I'd like to ask you about some very concerning images that were released yesterday that appeared to show Border Patrol agents whipping Haitian migrants. These acts certainly are intolerable and a complete diversion from your agency's mission. And my question to you is, can you explain to the committee what you'll be doing to address what Americans saw when looking at those images?
I'm very pleased you asked that question. It has been uppermost in my mind since I first saw the images late yesterday, Mr. Chairman. We commenced an investigation in my direction immediately. The Office of Professional Responsibility within the Department of Homeland Security's U.S. Customs and Border Protection, number one. Number two, we alerted the Inspector General of the incidents. Number three, I directed that the Office of Professional Responsibility be present on site in Del Rio 24/7 to ensure that the conduct of our personnel adheres to our policy, to our policies, to our training, and to our values. I was horrified to see the images, and we look forward to learning the facts that are adduced from the investigation, and we will take actions that those facts compel. We do not tolerate any mistreatment or abuse of a migrant, period. I also want to say, and I think it's very important to say, that I saw two other powerful things yesterday when I was there under the bridge in Del Rio. Number one, I saw the acute vulnerability of the Haitian population, the predominantly Haitian population, and I cannot overstate how difficult that is to see. We are speaking about vulnerable individuals in tragic circumstances. I also saw the extraordinary work of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, not only the United States Border Patrol, but its Office of Field Operations, as well as other agencies within the Department of Homeland Security that have been surged to Del Rio to address the situation in partnership with state and local law enforcement personnel, as well as the forces in civil society. We saw the American Red Cross. We saw World Central Kitchen providing food and supplies to these individuals. It's an all of government and all of local society effort there. And I want to say that the actions that we saw, the images that we saw, do not speak of the incredible men and women of U.S. Customs and Border Protection or of the Department of Homeland Security as an institution.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas responding to questions from Senate Homeland Security Committee Chair, Michigan Democrat Senator Gary Peters. Meanwhile, top congressional Democrats announced on Monday that they would tack a measure lifting the federal borrowing limit through the end of 2020 onto a bill to keep the government funded through December, which escalated a showdown with Republicans who have vowed to oppose legislation needed to avert a fiscal catastrophe. Well, the House is expected to take up the bill tonight. That's as Democrats juggle work on their $3.5 trillion economic package with the need to avoid a government shutdown in 10 days and a potential default on the national debt within weeks. While the bill tying a suspension on the debt limit through December 2022 to avoid a government shutdown is expected to easily pass the House, it appears to lack the votes in the Senate, where at least 10 Republicans would have to join with all Democrats to pass it. Here's Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell speaking with reporters earlier today.
You voted last month for the infrastructure bill that added $256 billion to the deficit, according to CBO. So aren't you also responsible for raising the deficit and debt for the Biden administration?
Well, a number of people involved in the bipartisan negotiation on the infrastructure bill actually felt that it was paid for, without getting into that argument. I have said from the beginning of the year that if the Democratic government, President, House, and Senate, wants to look for ways where we might be able to reach a bipartisan agreement, infrastructure is a good example. But look, even if it adds slightly to the national debt, it pales in comparison to what we're talking about here, a massive, massive increase in taxing and spending. My guess is some of the brave Democrats will probably carve back the taxing side, and you'll end up having even more added to the debt. It'll be interesting to see what Manchin and Sinema are able to achieve or what House moderates are able to achieve. But I never felt we should do nothing with the Democratic administration, particularly in an area that enjoys a lot of Republican support, and that's infrastructure.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. But the debt limit increase is needed to pay for trillions of dollars in debt racked up by lawmakers in both parties, including under President Donald J. Trump. Meanwhile, Democrats who joined the Republicans in increasing the limit during the Trump administration argue that the GOP should reciprocate under President Biden so the government does not default on its obligations. Here's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Given all the uncertainty that's out there and the fact that Democrats do control all levers of power in Washington, can you guarantee and reassure the American public that ultimately you will raise the debt ceiling, even if it requires just Democrats to do it?
This Secretary Yellen has made extremely clear that it would be a tremendous mistake to deviate from a bipartisan solution when we come to raising the debt ceiling, and that's what we Democrats are focused on. Next.
Do you support House Democratic leaders moving forward with the September 27th vote on infrastructure, even if the reconciliation package...
Look, our goal is to get the two-track process moving forward. We had a very serious discussion in the caucus about it. I've met with a group of the more moderate senators, and we are working very hard to come up with a two-track strategy, to come up with a reconciliation proposal as soon as we can, hopefully by the 27th. Yes.
What is the backup plan
Ian, I understand you want bipartisan support for raising the debt ceiling. If there's, if it's just not there, what's your backup?
Ask Leader McConnell. The bottom line is very simple. It should be bipartisan. They don't have any good arguments. We are pursuing it. We are pursuing it to get a bipartisan support. And we're beginning to see Republicans thinking that over, as you've seen by what some of them have said.
That's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Republicans argue that Democrats can lift the debt limit on their own, given that they can essentially reopen the budget blueprint they're using to push through President Biden's $3.5 trillion economic package. But Democrats have rejected that suggestion. Remember, whenever the House is in session, you can find it on C-SPAN. And you can always find the Senate, when in session, on C-SPAN 2. And a reminder that all of our coverage is online anytime at cspan.org. And if you missed any of this program, you can find it at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington delivered daily, right to your inbox, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, word for word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Thanks for listening today to Washington Today.